let's talk about WWDC 2020. It's next week. It's Monday, less than a week away. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. But before we do that, let's talk about some news stories this week. So, first up is something from you on the UK and what's going on with the exposure notification from Apple.
Correct. So if you recall back to about a month ago when the coronavirus was in full force, and obviously it still is, but Apple and Google were working on their solution to help with contact tracing with an API that eventually became the exposure notification stuff, and that shipped with iOS 13.5. You obviously had a nice story on 95 Mac about participation in the United States, and unfortunately it was quite lacking, right?
Yes.
And
yes,
still is. We've seen a few more countries come on board in the intervening weeks, like Germany and Australia and stuff are now doing it. But the situation with the UK originally was that they were not going to adopt the API. And what I predicted, and what's come true, is that they would struggle along trying to do it by themselves, you know, come up to the inevitable technical barriers, which is the fact that iOS doesn't let you run these location services in the background for very long, and it chews your battery life, and they'll eventually switch over to the Apple and Google endorsed system. And today they announced exactly that. So in a shock to, I think, pretty much no one, they have now said that they're going to adopt the exposure notification API. Eventually, they did complain about something about distance tracking. I guess they're working that out with Apple. They said they're having some sort of debate about that to try and improve the exposure notification stuff to fit their needs. And they said they will be shipping the app sometime. They didn't actually promise a release date, so it's not going to be anytime soon, I don't think. It's probably months away, but hopefully before the end of the year. But at least they're on the same page now as what is sensible.
Yeah, and that's the status in the US, is that we've got 4 states committed out of 50, and there's no shipping thing yet. So.
Yeah.
And people ask me, like, are you still following this stuff up? Yes. Nothing new. I asked Apple last week and got nothing back. Like, cause I'm sure that they're tracking as much as I am because they want to know. And they're actually probably in conversations encouraging it, and nothing yet there.
And I bet that makes up some, like, cause obviously they're going to have to do the intro, right? For on the stage event next week.
Sure. Yeah.
They're going to have to address, like, the coronavirus situation. They're probably going to have to address the Black Lives Matter and racism stuff as well. Like, and they do this plenty of times. So many WWCs have been host to, like, the encryption debate from 2016. Like, there's all stuff that always comes up. So I'm sure their like collaboration, because a lot of these countries are like pitting Apple as the bad guy. Like, oh, we were going to do it on our own, but Apple wouldn't let us. So now we're having to like be strong armed into doing this. So I'm sure they'll present their point of view as well. And like saying, we're collaborating with these countries and these regions, and, you know, Germany shipping it now to great success, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure that'll be like a segment at the start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then in the EU, there are more probes happening as of this week, looking into what is Apple allowed to do? What could regulation force Apple to change? Are Apple's policies as it relates to the App Store specifically fair for consumers and developers and everyone involved, or is Apple being unfair? What's changed this week?
Yeah, this is something that I'm sure Apple won't be touting on stage. This week, the European Commission, the European Competition Commission, formally announced that they are doing probes into the App Store situation and into Apple Pay. And this has been rumored for a while that they were kind of like looking into it, but now it's like formally on their books, and that they are, you know, surveying for companies to come forward and tell them about the injustices that are going on, or the supposed injustices, and then they'll spend the next, you know, 1 to 2 years deciding if there's a problem, if Apple is being unfair and monopolistic, and then we will get some sort of judgment. Like, recently they did like a $5 billion fine to Facebook, for instance, and the judgments can come either as monetary fines or as policy changes, at least in the EU. But obviously for something like the App Store, it kind of necessitates worldwide policy change. Within like 2 years, they'll have some sort of judgment on that basis. The problem is that inevitably Apple will appeal the situation. And so you won't actually get any real change for, you know, 5 years to come. Like the Ireland situation, the EU told Apple they need to pay back 13 billion euros in back taxes to Ireland. That ruling was 2016, and it's now 2020, and we're still no closer to that actually happening because, you know, appeals and lawsuits take forever. So this is a very long span, but it's just the next cabin in the train of the whole idea of, you know, Apple being abusive in its monopoly position, specifically on the App Store. The Apple Pay situation has been bubbling along as well, because the complaint with Apple Pay is that the iPhone is obviously locked down, and so competing payment services don't get the same access to the NFC chip as Apple Pay does. You don't get prompts for like to set up Apple Pay when you start your phone, and it says, you know, finish setting up your iPhone by enabling Apple Pay. But even if you just went to the App Store and downloaded a competing mobile payments app, they'll never be as seamless as Apple Pay, because Apple Pay allows you to just plonk your phone on the reader and then the Apple Pay interface can show up by itself. That kind of interaction is just not available to third-party apps for some good reasons, including performance and security and privacy and stuff. But also, it has this side effect of locking out competition. So that's the Apple Pay side of the argument. And as Apple tries to build on top of Apple Pay with stuff like Apple Card and other initiatives, obviously the stakes become ever higher about Apple abusing its position. The App Store situation is obviously pretty self-evident in that Apple doesn't let you release an app outside of the App Store. And so everyone has to be beholden to the App Store rules, which then means you're paying 30% to Apple at maximum for in-app purchases and app downloads. And you also have this like inane rule set that everyone has to agree to, and Apple basically becomes judge, jury, and executioner about what software can be on the store at all. And that is a complaint that Spotify has been, you know, they brought that to the EU originally. There was another Kobo, the Kobo eBook store, has now joined in the fray. Tile is obviously there as well, because they're also worried that Apple's going to squash them very soon with AirTags. And so that's all bubbling up, and we'll just have to wait and see if the EU actually come to a ruling about it. Almost coincidental timing, the very same day, there was this huge drama about the Hey app. So this is the Hey.com email service who launched this week. And they're a $99 a year email subscription service from the makers of Basecamp. Regardless of what you think about, you know, a $900 a year email service, the reality was they wanted to get an app on the App Store. Their version 1 was approved, and it did not use Apple in-app purchase. It didn't include links to the website or anything. It was just a situation similar to what you get with Netflix, where you log in with your account and then you get to use the service. But then they released a bug fix update and they weren't allowed back in the store. So this and that, and the makers of Basecamp are very prominent on Twitter. There was huge drama about that, and it just caused renewed focus on, you know, Apple's inane rule sets. Because like Spotify and Netflix and some other apps get exemptions on the App Store review guidelines because they're considered like reader apps. And again, these rule sets are just kind of obnoxious because Apple just makes up whatever rules they want. And we saw in April that they had this completely separate clause in the rules for premium subscription video apps, which then allowed Amazon Prime to use its own payment methods. And now Apple's new judgment appears to be that because Hey is not specifically targeted at businesses and they're not a content reader app, then they must offer a way to buy their subscription, their $99 subscription, as an in-app purchase, as well as offering online. So they can still offer it online, but Apple is annoyed that there is no way to actually buy it through their payment method as well. So it's kind of like, I think the rules are kind of crazy. Like, and this will be one of the many things that gets taken to European courts and maybe other courts around the world eventually. Like, I don't mind there being restrictions on what apps can be in the store, but you can't just have arbitrary rules at every turn that just favor Apple in every single case. You need clear rules that actually follow set processes so people can know what they're allowed to do and know what they're not. And especially with this Hey thing, it's so on the borderline. Like, why are Spotify, Netflix, and even something like Google Drive, which is currently counts as cloud storage under the reader app exclusion, are just allowed to carry on as normal, but then this email app is not a business app, so therefore it has to participate in the Apple payment system. Like, the ruling on what is a business app and what isn't is just insane. And at any moment, of course, Apple could then introduce another rule which says, also, if your app does this, then you're not allowed to, or you come into the gateway. So it doesn't paint a good picture in the same week as them, you know, essentially getting dinged to be under investigation.
And the week before, there is their developer conference, which is the audience that cares the most about these issues, aside from regulators, because it affects them. A couple of thoughts I had. One is that, you know, you mentioned how long it could take for the EU to force change in this way, if that does happen. Apple could always at any point just on their own timeline say, okay, you know, we hear you, we're going to make some changes, and that would be like the fast approach, you know, versus being forced to. The thing is you just, I guess the answer is like probably nothing, but you have to wonder if they go next week and it's developer week and they don't do anything, they don't say anything about this, because there's not really been any discussion from the Apple side of like, well, you know, we think these rules are correct, and, you know, but there will surely be lots of interview opportunities next week for Apple people on the record, And for the usual people to do those interviews, and you know, maybe we'll learn more next week.
Yeah, even the only if it change that really happened with the payment stuff, and this was 3 years ago now, was when they changed it so that if you have a subscription at purchase that lasts more than a year, the rate goes from 30 down to 15. That has been like their only concession of any, you know, magnitude.
And didn't that come out the week before WWDC?
Yeah, that did. Yeah.
And we didn't do anything like that this year. So
yeah, there wasn't really like a big news dump stuff so much that was strictly developer related.
Yeah, there were a couple of changes for Macs. A new GPU option for the 16-inch MacBook Pro. This is the computer that was introduced in October 2019, right? Mm. And so now it's got a, what's the new GPU option?
Yeah, so you used to be able to get a built-to-order option of a 5500M, and now they've added a new high-end GPU option, which is the 5600M. It's a bigger upgrade than it sounds just by the increment of the number, because it also comes with much faster video memory. So it's the HBM2 memory, like what you see in the Mac Pro. And it was and that necessarily associates with it a massive price jump. So the original high-end GPU option would be an extra $200. This is an extra $800. So it's a beefy, you know, it's a beefy GPU. We're still kind of waiting for benchmarks and testing to see if it's actually worth the money. But initial surveys and, you know, testing and stuff seems to suggest that it's a pretty nice upgrade. And it does kind of suggest that there isn't going to be a 16-inch MacBook Pro update next week, right? Like, because they wouldn't rev the GPU on its own 1 week before. I think realistically we're not going to see any changes to the 16-inch until like the end of the year, right? About a year on the normal schedule.
Sure. And then for the Mac Pro, what is this new SSD kit?
Yeah. So the Mac Pro, just like every other Mac in the lineup apart from the iMac, when you have SSDs, they're paired to the T2 chip that's inside them for performance and for security. But that also means they're non-changeable, right? They're just stuck there. And so the Mac Pro, you could kit out with the base model Mac Pro is $599, and you get 256 gigs of SSD, and you could equip it up to 8 terabytes. But up to now, you'd have to do it at time of purchase, right? Because you couldn't customize it later. And in a kind of surprise announcement on Monday, they announced a Mac Pro SSD kit, which allows you, after the fact, to buy new RAM from Apple, and then, you know, use or replaceably exchange it. Because even repairs on RAM before now, you were told just to contact Apple support. Like, there was no way to do it on your own. Whereas now you can get this, you can buy this SSD kit from the Apple Store, and if you are a Mac Pro owner, you can upgrade your RAM that way. And that's specifically the internal modules that directly talk to the T2 chip. Obviously, if you want to, you can just get like a PCI SSD card, SSD stick, and just slide in one of the PCI slots. Again, that's more storage and expandable, which is using one of the ports on the Mac Pro, but that isn't the same super high speeds, read-write speeds that you get from the internal SSD.
So, yeah, and this speaks to the modularity of the Mac Pro.
To do this upgrade, by the way, you have to buy this kit. This kit then has to be plugged in to another Mac, and you need a special USB-C cord to do it as well. So it's a bit of a palaver. Like, you've got to get like a MacBook Air, plug in this kit, and then you plug the other end of the kit into the Mac Pro, and it does the special like reflashing stuff to make the T2 chip not just like straight reject it. So
it should include the MacBook Air in the kit.
So this week, Happy Hour is sponsored by Sunbasket. If you're trying to reduce unnecessary trips outdoor at the moment, as you should be, Sunbasket could be the thing for you. It's the perfect and delicious solution for the times that we're living in. Sunbasket delivers healthy, delicious meals straight to your door. It offers recipes for all kinds of dietary preferences, like paleo, Mediterranean, vegetarian, gluten-free, so much more. Everything's available. It makes it easy and convenient to cook. Everything you need is delivered to your door, and all ingredients are appropriately portioned and ready to prep and cook. You can enjoy a dinner full of organic produce in as little as 15 minutes. Current recipes include hoisin steak strip, lettuce cups with pickled daikon and carrots, roasted salmon with miso glazed eggplant, and black bean tostadas Diablo with cabbage slaw and guacamole. Recipes are easy and simple to follow, so anyone can use Sunbasket, no matter how much experience they have in the kitchen. Now, Zach, I know you've been trying out some Sunbasket meals yourself, right?
That's right. Yeah, it comes in this box that's very sturdy, filled with ingredients And it's neat because it's like, it might as well be like a box of a freezer. And so you've got stuff that you can put in the fridge and the freezer, and it doesn't melt. So it's always neat how that happened, how they do that. But also the recipes and the food, I mean, it's delicious. And as kind of a non-cook, I can pull it off. But even better for somebody like me is I can tell, you know, someone in the family that enjoys cooking more to say, hey, I went shopping, you know, quote unquote, and, you know, here are some new things that we can try. And as someone who really enjoys cooking, then it's even easier. So it's a really cool service, especially, you know, when it's not ideal to get out and go shopping and, you know, put yourself out there like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sunbasket's facilities have the highest levels of food and employee safety in the wake of COVID-19. They've been reinforcing their strict adherence to operating procedures and increasing how regularly they sanitize the office and the distribution centers. And so right now, Sunbasket is offering $35 off your order when you go to sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour. That's all one word at checkout. Sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour at checkout for $35 off your order. Sunbasket.com/happyhour, promo code happy hour. Thanks to those guys for sponsoring the show.
All right, WWDC. What can we expect? What do we want to see? What's realistic? Let's kick it off. I've been discussing some of this stuff in other places so far, and I think it's useful to think about iOS as iOS 13.6, which will be coming, you know, next week probably. And then iOS 14, which will be the beta coming later in the fall. So let's start with iOS 13.6 and what sure. We think will be new there.
Yeah. So obviously 13.6 is the currently in beta testing, and it was originally called 13.5.5 and they renamed it. What 95 Mac reporting has found, obviously, what we've talked about before, is the Apple News Plus audio features, this new like audio articles initiative, is essentially fully implemented in 13.6. that everyone already has. You just need like some special private knowledge about which server flags to flick, and it just turns on, you get a new tab for audio. So that seems like something that they seem to be getting ready to prep and release, you know, sooner than iOS 14 itself. And then also this car key thing, which we've been hearing about for months and months now. And I know you kind of kicked this off when you did the discoveries about Apple working with BMW and probably releasing some kind of car key initiative, you know, back in like March timeframe. What happened this week is that it was spotted in the 13.6 privacy screens. There's actually like a full description of how the car key feature works. It would work in the wallet app. You can get a little QR code that you scan, or you download a vehicle manufacturer app and it just puts like a car key pass in your Apple wallet. You can share it over iMessage like we talked about before. And so those kind of like key service things seem to be, you know, the breadcrumbs are there for them to be coming out before iOS 14 in the fall. They seem to be coming out with 13.6, which is presumably getting a release date on Monday.
Yeah, the car key thing is like, I think it was actually like years ago, this kind of started, and like 2018, there was this car connectivity consortium that was standardizing, just generically called a digital key, and the Apple implementation seems to be called car key. And so this seemed like we're talking about right now, this seems like it's going to be something that they're ready to release next week. Would be surprised if not.
Well, again, the problem with something like car key is that it's not just getting support in the software on the phone. You also then need, you know, actual cars to support.
Well, that's the thing. There's a number of companies. So the partners aside from Apple are Audi, BMW. So those are high end, but General Motors, Hyundai, Volkswagen, And the list keeps going, but they've been involved since 2018. And I believe that there are 2019 and 2020 cars that have the technology needed.
Okay.
And they even like advertise that you'll be able to do this in the future. So it's like this big open secret. And so I think that Apple's just going to be like first to market to do this in the operating system without requiring an app. And that right now it's like, it's app based. And a lot of the feedback on this was like, well, Tesla can do it already, so there's nothing new here. But again, Tesla's is app-based too. You know, you can't tell the OS on your phone to do things. It's the Tesla app that's remotely controlling it. So,
and you can't like share over iMessage and have the nice
right, exactly.
Features, yeah. And security. And part of this privacy screen is talking about obviously the implications on your user privacy. And they say that Apple's never going to store information about vehicle usage, we're not worried about when you lock or unlock your car. The rules based on the vehicle car manufacturer might be different, so refer to their privacy policy there. But from Apple's perspective, it's just going to be a purely on-device feature. It's not going to involve the network.
Yeah. So that's quite key. And the News Plus audio stuff, you know, it's neat. If you've got to be a subscriber to News Plus, then there needs to be a price change there too for that to be compelling from the $10 a month right now. We discussed that recently in the last few shows.
Like the News Plus, I think their plan with the News Plus pricing probably won't change. They're probably just going to try and push it as part of like the services bundle, which is something that. Mm-hmm. You know, could be a WWDC announcement. It might also be like a September thing alongside the iPhone in the fall. But I think that's probably where they're heading with that, because they've got, like, I think when Apple arranges these prices with partners and newspapers or games when it comes to arcade, like, they don't announce it. Like, they think about the price and they're doing a lot. Like, I feel like they've even if the service flopped and nobody bought it, the price would be one of the last things to change, right? Like, they consider that stuff a lot. Like, you look at the HomePod, right? It took... I mean, I guess the HomePod did actually have a price cut, but that's rare, right? Like, Apple's... Generally, their product marketing doesn't like changing prices. So, I think what we're seeing here is them offering more features for the same price with the News Plus Audio. They're going to have some other changes in News App as well. And then, yeah, of course, they're going to bundle it and try and push it through that avenue too.
Yeah, in talking to people about iOS 14, there's a ton of stuff that I'm excited about as like a user to get like tweaks to things that you haven't been able to do before. I think the thing that people are most excited about is being able to put a widget on a home screen. You know, if it happens, how it would work, that kind of thing. So there's that. And then there's this list view version of the home screen. What do we expect there?
Yeah. So the list view stuff we have actually found like code evidence for. And so this would be, I think maybe just replacing the current today view. So, you know, the minus one page on the home screen where you just have a list of widgets.
Home screen zero.
Exactly. Home screen zero, minus one, we're going to call it. The essentially what you're going to get is like a search field at the top, and then below it will just list your apps. And there'll be some sorting by used recently. There'll be some Siri suggestion stuff. And then the other apps will just be below. And it offers a different way of getting at all your applications instead of having to scroll through the grids and grids of pages. And obviously then the search field at the top can then automatically just filter that list when you type in some words. And so that the most natural place for that to come for me is on the, you know, the page zero situation, which then obviously raises the question is, where do your widgets go? And maybe the widgets are just like further below that list, or maybe they are indeed migrating to be like home screen experiences. And you can easily imagine how, like, because right now the widgets on iPhone, they're like fixed height. They're only like, you know, 100 pixels tall or something. And then you have to press show more and it releases the full thing and you can see the whole thing. But it kind of looks pretty undynamic when they're all collapsed, because it's just the same height rows going all the way down. And especially some of the widgets, some widgets need more space by like their intrinsic content, and other widgets need less space. So the fact that they're currently all restricted to like a big blocks like this, some of them just have wasted space on screen when they're not expanded. And so you can see a pretty nice development there where you can firstly just get like widgets of different size. So similar to what you get in Control Center, right? Like all the buttons and stuff you press in Control Center are all not identical. You have like the single tiles, and then you have like the big four size tiles. Then you have some sliders that are like two high and one wide. Those kind of different sizes, they're not going to have like arbitrary, you know, it can be a circle, it can be a pentagon, right? But you can imagine them going from this current like one set size to like, maybe you can have a square, maybe you can have a one. And if it's going to the home screen, you can then imagine how they kind of like would slot in to the grid of icons. So like maybe one widget would take up the same amount of space as four app icons, right? Or maybe six app icons or one row of icons, that kind of thing. And then you'd be able to arrange them around. What like Android does is it has the kind of like separate app drawer, which is like the list of all your apps. Then it has a home screen where you can interplay like shortcuts to apps and widgets, but your home screen doesn't have all your apps on it. I don't think Apple's going to go that far. I'm pretty sure this like list view version of the home screen is going to be a different like sorting option. It's not going to be like, here's where all your apps are, and then your home screen, you can take stuff out of there. I'm pretty sure the home screen is still just going to be like all your apps in your system, but maybe you'll be able to like slot some widgets in between.
Yeah, Apple's approach seems to be like, if you do nothing new, or if you don't want to change anything, you can have it be the old way and then build around that, not like destroy and replace everything. So,
sure, yeah. And you can see very easily, like, maybe by default, your widgets don't move, right? They just stay on that page zero home screen. And then you like click or you like long press on them and it says, do you want to move this to your home screen? You say yes. And then they, you know, animate to the side and then they pop in the slot and you can choose where to place it. So there's a very like clear migration path rather than a situation where you like change up the whole dynamic of the home screen to like a draw model. Then you have these, all these problems about when someone updates, then you have to like do this big long tutorials about all your icons that were here are now over here. Maybe you need like migration screens or like, where do you actually want this stuff to go now? Like it just gets very messy. And I think a lot of people, you know, some people have so many apps that they just get like bogged down by the fact that they're all just on pages and pages and pages. But I think for a lot of people, the simplicity of it is that stuff can never really get lost because at the most, you're scrolling through like 6 or 7 pages just to find an icon to tap on, right? Like, And I think what you do find is people with Android phones, sometimes they're looking for things and they just, you know, they never even scroll to the bottom of their app draw list. They'll just never get there because it's just that there's a directness to the iPhone experience where it's just straight on the home screen. And obviously the widget stuff could also benefit on the iPad as well. Like, I think this is what we were kind of hoping to see last year when there were all these rumors about this big home screen redesign coming to the iPad. And then what they shipped was, well, the first screen has a skinny sidebar of widgets and everything else is identical. Like, we obviously want more than that. The list view stuff we found in the iOS 14 code that was leaked. The widget stuff is more just like people on Twitter are talking about it and stuff, but we haven't found like concrete evidence for it. Although I think we all kind of agree that it would be beneficial.
Yeah, I think there's some evidence too. I think that there was
some bits and pieces, but it's not like smoking gun.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there.
Because I'd love to have like because people always say like, I wish the weather would actually show the real weather, not just be a static icon. Well, the obvious answer there is you just, instead of having the icon, you just have the widget instead. And maybe you can like long press on the icon, say convert to widget, and then it just makes it like a double height one. Like there's stuff like that that fits inside the current model of how the home screen works. It just makes it more dynamic and more modern and actually starts to take advantage of the incredible processing power that these phones have these days. Plus the fact that most people now have like more battery than they need in most cases. So it makes sense to offer ways to actually use that stuff.
Yep. For wallpaper stuff, there's some new things here. So, one of the things with wallpapers is that, you know, on the Mac, you can go out and find an image and secondary click it and make it your background and you're done. On iOS, you've always had to, if it's on the web or if it's in like a wallpaper collection gallery app that's meant for wallpapers, you have to, save the image or give permission for the image to go to photos in the first place and then save it and then go and find the image and then set it as a wallpaper from the photos app. This will change with iOS 14, to believe, where, there'll be special integration in the wallpaper section of settings to promote those apps, and that apps will be able to set it directly from their app, I believe, right?
Yeah, it looks like there's going to be some kind of API for a direct setting of wallpaper from inside an app and for an app to kind of represent itself as like a wallpaper pack. So if you went into settings wallpaper, as well as seeing the wallpapers that Apple provide, there'll be like new sections which represent your applications, and the wallpapers that they bring to the system would then be shown there. And maybe they'll even make it like a wallpaper store, so there could be like in-app purchases to buy packs, similar to what we've seen with the iMessage app store and stickers, right? Imagine that kind of model where you have like the core app, then you have the iMessage app extension which has the stickers in it. You'd have that for wallpapers as well, where you download the core app, then you go into settings and you see, as well as the Apple wallpapers, you look below and it says third-party app, and then it has all their wallpapers beneath as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And obviously right now, if you, these current things where if you want a custom wallpaper, you're only allowed to have one image, right? Like the Apple wallpapers let you have the light and dark variants. But if you go to the, if you set a custom image at the moment, it's the same image in both situations. What this API would let the app do is say, here's this kind of bundle of wallpapers for the different, you know, interface styles, the different themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then as a CarPlay fan, there's this ability that we expect will come to iOS 14 for CarPlay to have wallpapers. I don't think we know if they can be custom or not, but at least like the default ones that you see on iOS 13, where they change from light to dark, there's like the reddish and orange and the blue and the green and black and gray. And for the first time with CarPlay, the ability to not just have a black or all white background, but then to have at least this like dynamic dark mode, light mode wallpaper, something that not just, you know, like the first version of the iPhone as the home screen. So I'm excited about that. And then maybe also with this whole tie-in that there'll be the ability to have like whatever image is your wallpaper on CarPlay. It wouldn't be too wild, but I don't think we know yet.
Yeah, and I think We've seen evidence that they're going to let other apps be the dashboard interface as well, because right now you only get Apple Maps on the CarPlay screen, right?
I thought that there was an update.
Did they already ship that? They might have done. I can't remember.
Yeah, nobody does it. Nobody does it yet. So
yeah, like, okay, yeah, that's probably like lots of CarPlay features. the capability is probably there, but no third party app actually supports it. Yeah.
It was an update like 13.3 or something that included that, and I'm on the Waze test flight, and that didn't make a difference. There's not there yet. Google Maps isn't. Maybe there's some like more niche map that does it, but none that I've seen. But that, you know, it's possible.
Sure.
Yep. In default app settings, explain this.
Yeah. So this kind of ties into the lawsuits and the antitrust and the competition stuff. Is that, you know, Apple's probably going to fight hard to change away from the 30% cut, because that funnels so much of their services business growth, revenue growth at the moment. So one thing they might want to do is offer concessions in other departments. And something that Bloomberg reported a few months ago is that Apple was seriously considering supporting like default app settings for the first time. So right now, if you click on a link, it always opens with Safari, no matter what third-party browser you have installed. If you click on an email option, it always launches Apple Mail, no matter what mail apps you have installed. And so it seems like with 14, they're going to add limited support for third-party apps to kind of become the new default. So if you do use Chrome, you'll be able to, obviously, and this will require the third-party apps to update and support the new APIs and stuff. So imagine this won't happen automatically. It will come down the road. Mm-hmm. But a third-party web browser could expose itself as a web browser. And then maybe there's like a screen settings, which is like default apps. And then there's different categories, like one for browser, one for mail, maybe one for music. And then in there, you choose, you know, which app actually launches this thing. You know, this is a concept that we've seen on the desktop for years, right? Like on Mac. On Mac OS, you can happily use Chrome as your default thing, and whenever you click a link, it opens in Chrome rather than Safari. And then you have each of the browsers. It's so funny when you get a new Mac and then you like install Chrome for the first time, Safari puts a little like notification window like, please set us as the default browser. And then if you do that, you open Chrome, it's like, please set us the new browser. So you have all that garbage that also comes along for the ride. But the core feature is something that Apple can use to like, A, people want it, right? Because there are people that generally do use the Gmail app over the Apple Mail app, or they use Chrome or Safari. And so it is a feature for customers as well, but also it's a thing where Apple can say to like regulators, look, we're not trying to shut out competition here. These apps can have as much access to the platform that we do. They just have to go through the App Store.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and you know, think about that too, not just the Mac, but the way that the Echo ecosystem works, where you can set like your default streaming music provider or your default radio provider, you know, those kind of things. That same model kind of makes sense, where you just add to that list of what is a category as you go.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you tie into that. So
yeah, similar to SiriKit, right? Like originally mm-hmm. Siri was completely first party. Then they started adding some domains where you could say, now I can, you know, use my custom to-do list app rather than reminders with Siri. And then later on they added even more. And so as of iOS 13, you can interface with Spotify through Siri just by specifying Spotify when you'd make a music request, right? One limitation on that currently is that you have to say the name of the application every single time, right? So if you don't specify the name of the app, it always assumes whatever the Apple stock app is, because that's always the default, i.e. the Apple Music app, for instance. One of these things that could tie into the default app settings is that it also would affect your preferences for Siri as well. So you could then just start doing music requests and it would always route it to Spotify, for instance. Mm-hmm. And that would make Spotify very happy, because that's one of the things they're very annoyed about, apart from the financial stuff.
Yep. All right. Who is Gobi? What is Gobi?
Gobi is the code name for this.
Yeah, we won't see Gobi next week.
Yeah, we won't see a Gobi thing. They'll rename it. Or they might integrate the features of Gobi into like the camera app or the maps app or something. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about this before. Obviously, this came out of the iOS 14 leaked builds. It's some kind of like augmented reality experience app that will be based on like QR codes in the real world. So you like scan a QR code on your phone and then you see this inter-app experience. If you remember like a year and a half ago now, they started doing these kind of like AR walks at the Apple Store. Mm-hmm. And they have experiences at the Apple Store. And to do those, the Apple Store has to like lend you a phone that has this app installed, and then you see it on the screen, right? Like, and they did then add some integration to the Apple Store app itself. But
right. Yep.
this is going to take like that concept and expand it to like a system level feature. So you don't have to download an app for every single thing. You can just like walk around your environment. Oh, this says that there's a custom AR experience here. You just hold it your phone. It finds the QR code. It scans it and you can see the world. And down the road, this would also support, you know, the augmented reality headset stuff. Why they're probably doing it this year versus the end of the other year is because this year the iPhone 12 is going to have the LiDAR scanner, which is what the 2020 iPad Pro has. And right now, there isn't much of an argument for why the 2020 iPad Pro needs the LiDAR scanner because very few apps support it in any way at all. So the iPad's like secondary, obviously, to the phone business. And when Apple launches the iPhone in the fall, they're going to have some story about, you know, what the heck are you supposed to use this LiDAR scanner for? So offering a built-in system app that can do augmented reality stuff is clearly one way to achieve that.
Yep, yep. Accessibility stuff, we think that there'll be new ways to have the iPhone and iPad recognize sound. So for a couple of these examples are fire alarms and sirens. And there's like a whole class of the way that the iPhone can recognize what a sound is, right? Like if you're in photos, the photos can look at the live photo, analyze it for like kids, you know, the sound of babies crying, and then you can search for babies, and that'll be like one of the things. The idea here is that if you know, you rely on hearing aids or some other thing that the iPhone is a tool for you there, then if it's a specific sound that's like emergency related, then there'd be this feature that tells you this is not just a sound, but this is a specific sound that has a bigger meaning. Right? You know, a siren is like there's an emergency.
Yeah, exactly. It's for like if you're deaf or you're hard of hearing, the iPhone, you know, obviously can hear the world way better than you can, so it can pop these things up on the screen.
Yeah, hope we see that on stage because that'll be a cool demonstration.
Yeah. And they did like last year the big accessibility thing was voice control, and they definitely had stage time for that. And although we didn't find code emphasis, it'd be kind of cool if you could get like some integration with like the home or Find My Friends kind of stuff. Like if you're in the garden and it hears like the fire alarm going off or like a baby crying, it'd be cool if you could get like notification in your watch that something bad's happening. Do you know what I mean? Like it doesn't just like all these accessibility features often have uses for everybody, right? And it's and so a lot of the time you see stuff where it's like you go in accessibility and you have like the really hardcore stuff if you really are, you know, deaf and you can enable extra toggles, but at a basic level, these features just, you know, help everyone in the world as well.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And let's see where we go from here. HomeKit. I love the HomeKit stuff. This is one of the first things that we learned. It's this ability for color temperature lights in HomeKit. So like Hue makes these, other companies make these, where they're not just white lights. They can either be white lights with different color temperatures from like nearly blue to orange, or just all colors. So you can change it to any color. What this new feature in HomeKit for iOS 14 will be is what we call night shift for lights. Like we don't know what it'll actually be called, but the idea is that the color temperature changes throughout the day, you know, based on sunset and sunrise, we believe. So that if the sun's down, then the lights can go warmer. If the sun's up, then the lights will be cooler. So it's the difference in like daylight and like a fire, basically. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, because right now, like some third-party solutions exist, but they only work with like their brand of light.
Yeah, so. It's no connection to HomeKit there for that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, even if they work with HomeKit, that feature doesn't go over. And we've also seen in the HomeKit space the support for face recognition. So right now with like HomeKit Secure Video, you can recognize is that a person or an animal or a vehicle, but you can't recognize like which person is that. And in this case, there seems to be the support for probably alerts based on or automations based on if did this specific person, you know, become detected. Exactly. And then beyond that, I think there's some cool stuff coming with Apple TV. I guess tvOS 14, where you get better support for external AirPlay speakers like HomePod. I mean, I it's so lacking that I think there's a lot of room for improvement there.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. On-device language translation. This was one of the more recent discoveries that we've had, right?
Yeah. So this seems to be like there might be an app on its own which lets you do translation. And obviously, right now you have to use like Apple doesn't offer a translation service. You have to use a third party one, which they all use over the network, right? What we believe is happening is that Apple's going to have some kind of like using the neural engine, it's going to have some kind of on-device translation system for some set of languages. So you could do offline translation. There might be an app, but there also might just be a system feature where if you're like, if you are in another country and you go to the app store, most app store descriptions are not localized to your language. So if the phone can just translate it for you and give you a decent translation so you actually know what the app's about, that's very helpful. It also may tie into a future AirPods feature, which we've seen some of the manufacturers do, where like you, there's like the demo where they talk in French and then the AirPods ultimately translate, or they, you know, the wireless earbuds translate to English, you talk back in English, and then the other person hears it in French. Like, that kind of thing becomes a lot easier for Apple to achieve if they have an on-device service, because you don't have to worry about internet access. So there seems to be quite a lot of translation stuff that I'm sure will make a good demo, and then we'll have to actually see in practice how good and how accurate the translations are. Because I use like translations in Chinese all the time, because a lot of our 9to5 Mac reporting is based off these Chinese websites, right, and these Chinese reporting. And so, you know, I can't read Chinese, but I use Chrome, and there's a little translate button in Safari in the browser window that I press, and it talks to Google Translate and it translates the page. Apparently, Apple's going to have their version of that built into Safari itself, and it'd be great if it can do it. I am a bit skeptical about how good on-device translation can be versus, you know, having access to like the cloud and letting the cloud actually manage it.
It reminds me of when Craig Federighi said, like, we don't need pictures of your horses. Like, we know what a horse looks like, so we can put that on device and figure it out. We don't need to study your pictures to know what a horse looks like. And it's like, can probably get do, you know, the same idea of we know how things translate. We can put it on device.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. It's one of those things where it's like, if it really can be done locally, why hasn't someone done it already? Like, good sure. Offline translation just doesn't exist today. So if Apple can do it, it'd be very impressive.
Yep. And then lastly, for iOS stuff, at least for the moment, it is what would have been news this week anyway, which is a new discovery that Felipe covered for 9to5 Mac, which is that the podcast app seems to be, for iOS 14, seems to have a big being rebuilt to be structured more like the music app, where you've got a For You tab and you've got profiles. Mm-hmm. And you've got not just show trailers, but per episode trailers, if you want to have that in the app experience, and also bonus content, including video. So if you want to attach the video version of this episode to the podcast, then that might be possible with iOS 14. Whereas like right now it's separate on YouTube, and then the podcast app is like the audio episode. There may be some kind of connection there, or like just bonus segments per an episode. So it's like a sub part of an episode and not just like a new entry in the feed. And this all seems to be because Apple's doing, you know, we basically know that they're going to be doing Apple original podcasts to compete with what Spotify's doing. And some of these will be like focused on, you know, their Apple TV shows as a way to kind of cross promote, which we welcome. But it often happens this way, if not always, that if Apple's got a new kind of service or thing that they want to promote, they kind of clean up the platform that goes through.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's rare for them to like redesign an app just for the sake of it. There's normally a motivation behind it. Like last year, they redesigned the wallet app, remember? And then a month later, they announced the Apple Card. So it was like obvious connections there. And so
yeah.
I think between like Apple News Plus audio, podcasts, I'm sure they have a TV Plus update of some description. There's probably going to be a services segment at this event. Everyone loves to do the classic line of, well, WWC, it's Worldwide Developer Conference. They didn't talk about developer stuff, but that's just completely untrue, right? Like Apple Music, the original service, was introduced at a WWDC for, you know, a rather extraordinary, laboriously long segment of the show, and they had Drake come up and all that sort of stuff. But that was a WWDC event, and they do plenty of just like raw consumer service feature announcement stuffs in June. They just always do it. So that's why I don't want to entirely rule out the bundle stuff, because maybe sure. Once they add on podcast, because obviously they're going to put podcasts in the bundle as well, right? Why not? So you have the podcasting stuff, you have the News Plus audio stuff. Maybe the bundle comes now, or maybe again, that's a full thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, let's take an ad break here.
Yep, let's do our second ad of the show. Okay. It is ExpressVPN. We all know that a VPN protects your privacy and your security, but you can also use a VPN to evade geographic content blocks, like accessing movies and TV shows that simply aren't available to you in your country, but are to someone else somewhere else in the world. You can use ExpressVPN to change your location. Not literally, but when you connect to ExpressVPN, you can choose the physical location of the server that's connecting to the website. So you can appear to be from somewhere else to sites like Netflix, Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube. The list just goes on and on. Like, are you in the US and you want to watch Doctor Who or something like Blackadder? Just fire up ExpressVPN, set your location to the UK, and you can see the same content library as I do when I use Netflix. ExpressVPN hides your real IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you are located. And you can choose from almost 100 different countries. There are hundreds of VPNs out there to choose from, but ExpressVPN stands apart as being ridiculously fast. You can stream HD video without any buffering or lag whilst proxying over their VPN connection. And of course, you can use ExpressVPN across all your devices. iPhone, Android, games consoles, smart TVs, so much more. You can watch what you want, on the go, on the big screen, wherever you are. And if you use our special link right now, that's expressvpn.com/happyhour, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself online. Go to expressvpn.com/happyhour to get started.
All right, very nice. Let's talk about watchOS 7. So I'm going to combine some of these things in our notes together and see if we can kind of speed through some of this stuff. So new watch faces. When they present watchOS, they typically start with new watch faces because it is part of the software update. Like, that's how you get new watch faces on the Apple Watch right now. And so one that we have seen referenced by the name is Infograph Pro. And what we know about it is it will have a built-in decimeter around the dial. And we've talked in depth about, like, you know, what is this? And it's very much barred from, like, the analog watch world. And there's no necessary reason for having it be digital on, you know, analog interpretation of a face, you know, kind of thing. But it will be there. And then an infograph is already, like, a face style where it seems to be, like, information dense and they've got a few versions of those. This will be a new one. And then international flag faces. This was also referenced in code. We haven't seen yet, but it's an easy, new face category where, you know, they've got the pride face, for example, and there's the really cool one where it animates as, like, ripples and looks kind of like maybe a flag. You could do that same thing, but, you know, change the colors, use the same style, and now it's the international flag face, and the way that you switch between countries is, like, change the mode of the face. And just like we've seen the new pride band this year, where it's, like, multiple strips of color to make up one sport band, I think it'd be very neat to see, and, like, just no surprise at all if they did that for ones that match the country faces. And that it's based on the Olympics, which is delayed, and this is all based in from December. And so maybe this changes, you know, maybe they save it for, like, an update to iOS or watchOS 7 next year or sometime, but it's certainly being worked on. And then there's the whole thing with, like, what do you do with your watch face that maybe there's this ability to share your watch face configuration. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if I do, you know, you can't do custom faces yet. And we don't think this is the year that you'll be able to. But that if there is, you know, more customization options being added, that would be wonderful and welcomed. But also B, if you've got a watch face that, you know, you've got it personalized and somebody sees it and they're like, I like your watch face. How do you do that? The ability to share from the watch app on your iPhone with them and, like, message it to them, and then they can load it into their watch app and have it on their watch face, you know. And if they've got third party watch apps on the face, then they can, you know, link to download those on the watch too. So we think we'll see those three things, you know, the Infograph Pro face, maybe international flag face, maybe even more faces, because what, you know, it's that tends to be what makes up some of the watchOS features is new ways to do watch faces, and then also sharing faces.
Yeah, and sadly, again, this seems like another year is going to go by without, like, a third-party watch face store or anything in that ilk. And I think we both agree that would be a great addition for the platform, but if they're not going to do that, they should just add more face options, just because they still always need more. Like, going back to the original watch presentation, the watch is about expressing your own personal style and taste, and if you have 20 watch faces, that's great, but after a while, you start to get a bit bored of them. And, like, even in the most recent update where they added the rainbow faces, that kind of, like, spruced up for me a little bit. So I've been running, you know, Rainbow California for a while. But, you know, that you just always need more. Like, ideally, you'd have a watch face store which had thousands and thousands of watch faces to choose from. But in the absence of that, you need Apple to add, like, you know, a handful of new faces every single time around. Like, almost as frequently as emoji get added.
Yeah, my pal Ian Blackburn, he has a good question, which is, you know, kind of could that mean that you could sync watch faces between watches? And so if you've got multiple watches right now, it's just totally separate as to how those go. Kind of an edge case, but I mean, if you use an old watch face for, or an old watch for sleep tracking, then you can't do that. And the only way to really sync is if you, you know, back up and restore. And so it's just at that point of like replacing your watch that you get that, not even sync, but like literally back up and restore. So maybe this would be, you know, in that realm. I'll give a quick update on the Hey situation. So right now, as we're recording, there's two pieces of news. One is that Apple has sent a letter to Hey, the developers behind Hey, to say change your app or leave the app store. They said that their rules are clear, consistent, and enforceable. And okay, and then the next thing
I'd say they're enforceable. I don't know about the first two.
And then the next thing is that Phil Schiller from Apple has given an interview to TechCrunch to say that their position on Hey has not changed and that no rule changes are imminent. So they're getting that out of the way before WWDC.
Yeah.
nothing new there.
I mean, if that's going to be their stance, then the rules aren't changing until like the EU forces them to.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
this would be the perfect time to actually make some sort of concession. Like, okay, all apps are allowed to offer payment methods outside the app store as long as you don't link to them inside the app store, right? So it's not just restricted to the reader category, it can just be anything. But if they said that there and then, they have no intention of changing any of this stuff. Like, it will stay like that for years.
Yeah. One of these days when it slows down, we should do a deep dive on the antitrust stuff, because it's, you know, we've talked about it over the, you know, years, but just one like simple this is what it is episode, I think, would be useful.
Unfortunately, we're working straight into heavy news period, so it'll be a while. But also, it will take years for the antitrust stuff to get resolved. So
yeah, it won't go anytime soon.
Yeah.
Next up for the WatchOS 7 update, one thing that I love is this feature called School Time. So imagine in the future, when kids go back to school, you know, this all came before COVID-19. And so we don't know if some of these features will be changed or put off, you know, for other features that are more timely. But the feature called School Time, where when you use the watch, there'll be like a parental control, for children to have certain apps and functionalities be limited based on, you know, school hours and maybe location. And so that's kind of for the first time right now. It's like all out. The watch is the watch anywhere you go. And then paired with that is the ability for a kid to have a parent-issued Apple Watch where they set it up from the parent's phone. And, you know, presumably there's either like the child Apple ID through family sharing, but not to have one iPhone with an Apple ID per Apple Watch with an Apple ID. Because right now, even with family sharing, there's no consideration for a parent setting up an Apple Watch for their kid unless their kid has an Apple Watch with a different Apple ID and everything.
So you can't like send your kid to school with just a watch, because you also need to have a phone to some description as well. So
yeah, I mean, and the way that we do it at my home is that the phone does stay here and the watch is on cellular, so it works. But you just don't get those restrictions, and that the kid had to have, you know, our daughter had to have an iPhone to have an Apple Watch. But this would be that we believe, based on the reporting that we have, is that you could, you know, suddenly turn the Series 3 Apple Watch into like made for kids. You know, you could price it even lower in the future if you wanted to. And it's often on sale anyway.
Yeah, but, and there have been rumors that there's going to be like a Series 3S this year, where they just basically keep the same casing but give it a faster chip, like the same chip as what the Series 7 watch will have, but it'll just have the older design, and it'll also have like full detection, that kind of stuff. So I think they're making for a big play for just expanding who's going to buy a watch this year.
That's a really good thing to do. And then sleep mode and sleep tracking, like we've been watching this be developed over the years. Yeah, and this is one of those things where we don't know if it would be, you know, it requires a new watch. It would be a kind of a surprise if it does, because people want these things to track sleep already. You can find apps that do it and do it pretty well. Apple's will be more integrated throughout the system. So like if you've got below 30% battery life, the watch will say, hey, you know, that you might not make it through the night with this Apple Watch.
Yeah, and obviously it will synchronize with like the bedtime mode on the iPhone as well. Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're going to have like a sleep mode on the phone side as well. It's not just a watch specific thing.
Yeah. So hopefully it comes in. And if it's not a hardware thing, then WWDC with watchOS 7 is when we would see it. There's this other thing, which is the ability for the Apple Watch to detect blood oxygen levels. And, you know, years ago, iFixit had a teardown that suggested that any Apple Watch, you know, from the first one could do that. They haven't. I don't think it's just FCC because they've been able to pull off ECG and more. And so that one's probably new hardware related and not software, but there's a non-zero chance it is software and they turn it on next week, you know, with WatchOS 7 beta. We'll see. At any rate, all of these things come out in the fall. Is the only thing we expect to see next week, like released, is the Apple News Audio and the car key stuff, which car key would apply to the watch, we believe, too. TVOS 14, what do we have there?
Not much.
No way.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much rumored. Like, there was screen time. So obviously screen time exists now on the Mac and the iPhone and the iPad. And you're basically going to get some form of screen time come to the Apple Watch as well with the school time stuff. Apparently they're going to do screen time for Apple TV as well. The permanent pairing to the HomePod. So you can do like stereo HomePod to the Apple TV and it actually works. We obviously mentioned that in the iOS section, but something that's sorely needed, especially as they try and make a renewed effort with the HomePod this year in general, right? Like, we expect at some point this year they're going to come out with a HomePod Mini. They're probably going to realign the HomePod. And that's one thing that doesn't really fit into any of these, like, operating system categories. But I think in general, I'm hoping at least to see, you know, a big effort this year with the HomePod and the HomePod software. Again, we're always wanting, like, a big Siri update. Who knows if it's happening? But at the very least, they can upgrade the HomePod stuff. Like, a part of the default apps thing is the ability for Spotify to run natively on the HomePod. So right now you only have Apple Music, but through the Siri voice assistant, if you want to use any other music service on the HomePod, you have to just AirPlay it right from the phone. And one of the things that it seems like they're going to add is the ability for third-party music services to run independently on the HomePod itself. Like, you know, like they can do on Amazon Echo or Alexa or Google Home, all that sort of stuff, but the HomePod couldn't do it. And so that seems to be one of the things that they're actually going to add this year. And then maybe in September they follow up with, you know, the new HomePod hardware lineup as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a question in the chat on YouTube in the live episode, which is anything about iPadOS. And in the reporting, there was a lot of stuff about iPadOS. It just happened to come in iOS 13.4. So
yeah, with the trackpad stuff. Like, obviously, all the iOS 14 features we discussed will come to the iPad as well. Obviously we want them to do like some major stuff with like multitasking on the iPad, and I'd love to see like Siri no longer be like a full screen modal experience. It'd be great if it was just like on the Mac where it's just a thing that sits in the corner and it helps you out and it goes away, but there just isn't the rumors and reporting to back that up really. Like,
yeah, maybe,
and I think after they've done such a big, they did like the iPadOS first year last year and then they followed up with the trackpad stuff in 13.4, I really just wouldn't expect like massive iPad specific changes coming this year. Sadly, I don't think it's on the cycle for it.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else on TVOS 14?
Nothing specifically on like what we've heard about. Obviously, there is new Apple TV hardware coming, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few more features in that area. They might have an Apple Arcade section here, right? Just talking about games and stuff, because we think there may even be like an Apple game controller in development. I'd love for there to be a new Apple TV at this event. Again, I think that's coming later in the year. And as we've talked about endless times on this show, the TV app itself needs a lot of love and a lot of changes. Hopefully they're going to announce that, but again, we haven't had any rumors to support that, so we'll just have to see if that happens. And if it does, I'll be very happy, but I'm not getting my hopes up too much.
Yeah. All right. macOS 10.16. So I'll talk about some things coming here. We don't know a whole lot about what could be new in macOS this year, because the big story will be developers who want to prepare their apps for ARM-based Apple design chips running in Macs. That'll be where all the work goes into this year. So we'll get more on that in a moment. But the one thing that we do expect is that at least the Messages app on the Mac will have more features like it has on iPhone and iPad. Like right now, there are so many things from, you know, minor things like the Messages app store, iMessage app store, and sticker packs on like originating that stuff from the Mac. You cannot do it. You can see it, but you can't originate it. To Apple Pay Cash you can't do on the Mac.
The bubble effects, the screen effects.
Yeah, to like one really big deal thing, which to me I think is just like where this all makes so much sense is last year, search got really good on iOS for messages on and iPadOS. On the Mac, it's still not good at all. And so if you just replace the messages app on the Mac where features have been being removed for years anyway, like AIM support and whatever else. You know, used to you could do messages theater or whatever it was called, where you could like, you know, video chat, and then FaceTime came along. And so you don't need that in there anymore. To just take away the messages app as we know it today and then have a catalyst version of the iPad app on the Mac.
Yeah, the iPad messages app.
Yeah, you've got windowing, you've got all kind of stuff that you need. So I don't think there's much that, if anything, that we'd lose there.
And there's rumors that the message iMessage platform in general is getting updated this year, like maybe the ability to delete messages, better
enhancements
to group messaging with typing indicators. I think they're going to let you like rename the room. There's probably some other stuff as well as they try and compete more with like WhatsApp and stuff. So that would tie into as well. Just and how they're going to get all those features on the Mac. They're probably just going to make the iPad app but show up on the Mac, and
out of all of
Apple's applications, you know, Catalyst hasn't been a stellar sign, but the Messages app is so bad that the current Messages app on the Mac is so bad that Catalyst won't be a huge improvement there.
Yep. All right. And then hardware wise, you know, we talked about the redesigned iMac rumor last week. So that's one thing that we think will be there. Please, that'd be very nice. You mentioned HomePod, so there's features there that we think will be coming. We don't even know because the HomePod Mini has been rumored for a while. I think Mark Gurman's pretty confident that it's coming sometime this year.
Yeah.
We just don't know when. And so, you know, the first HomePod was announced at WWDC for like, you know, pending in the fall. There's no need to pre-announce it again. You know, it would be now it's available to purchase in the next few weeks.
I mean, ideally, there'd be so many new HomePod OS features that they actually do have a beta program this year. Because then,
and I was wondering too on another podcast this week if the fact that like underlying in code they're using tvOS, which could maybe help out with the audio integration, that would also employ a beta. You know,
exactly.
Just run it through tvOS, but we'll
see. Like there's plenty of, you know, the HomePod has limits as such as a cool speaker it is. It just, Siri needs to be better, and then the capabilities of the HomePod itself need to improve, and especially if they're going to add like Spotify integration, third-party app integration. The idea of a beta program this year seems more likely than ever, and I can see them announcing all that stuff in June, and then when the HomePod OS actually comes out in September, that's when they introduce the new cheaper lineup for the holiday season.
Yeah. And there's not really been a reason to have a beta for, I mean, betas are for developers to test their apps against new SDKs that aren't released yet. There's not been a reason for that for HomePod, really. But once you have the situation where you can have, you know, integrated
like apps actually app running experience, on the HomePod itself, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Then there's a reason to have a beta and an SDK. So, hopefully one that you can put on your device. So.
The other hardware thing is AirTags, obviously. We've been waiting for these for like 2 years now. Again, we're pretty confident these are coming out this year, but whether it's a June thing, whether it's a September thing is very unclear. But I'm looking forward to an AirTag. I'd love an AirTag in my life. It's been so long now. It's like, come on, just ship me one.
Yeah. I would put one. I have a new thing I mentioned on the show, which is the motorcycle. I'd put one on the motorcycle. That is, because we were talking about like the cost to item that gets lost, ratio. If it's what's your price guess? You know,
because originally I was thinking 50, and then Mark Gurman had a report was like they're going to have a nice keychain and leather case that it will slot into. So now I'm thinking like 70. But
okay, yeah,
yeah.
So I can't put a $70 tag on. You know, something costs, right? But I can on a motorcycle, so you know, or my dog. Although the dog has a really cool LTE collar, so it's useful. I think that does it. You know, and people have asked about some things like, you know, will Siri be upgraded this year? You know, we always want it to be. There just hasn't been any talk about it, but there's always potential for, you know, like Swift, I guess, where there's something that they do keep. Close.
And then they keep buying companies, and we know we heard about one last month, but they've been buying companies like that for years now, and it's definitely something that doesn't really need to escape the bounds of the campus, and then they can just roll out and announce. And it would be great if this is the year that John Giandrea actually gets like something meaty enough to give stage time to.
Sure, yeah.
So it'd be great if we could, like, see him and he, you know, even if it's just, like, similar to what they did with Apple Maps, right, where last year they announced, like, this new Apple Maps regime where they're going to, or sorry, 2 years ago, they announced a new Apple Maps project where they're, you know, building it with their own data and it's going to take time and it will slowly roll out over the course of the year. Like, if they could do something for that Siri, they're like, we're starting small with, like, this one domain where we're going to power it on this completely new thing where it just has much better understanding about personalization and context and, you know, it'll be super fast to respond and everything like that. And we'll, you know, we'll be deploying that over our entire platform over the coming, you know, months and years and stuff. Like, it doesn't have to be a complete overhaul all in one day, but I feel like with so many products now depending on voice input and they got the HomePod update coming out, like, it just feels there's so much pressure on them to actually show a meaningful difference there.
Yeah. Michael Bond in the chat, who's had some great commentary this hour, asked, would it be wrong to make my kids wear Apple Tile bracelets? I think not, because I make my kid wear her Apple Watch when she goes out. And the Tile is like the level down from that, but the same goal. So,
you know, one other thing I saw in the chat earlier is about the notifications for incoming phone calls on the iPhone. I'd love for that to change. Like, right now, it's a full screen experience. And every time you could be doing anything, and then you just, your whole phone gets taken over by this picture of someone's coming in, you can accept or deny. And it doesn't have to be like the default, but it'd be great if you go into settings, change the phone preferences, and just say incoming calls coming in as banner notifications instead. And then they just slide out from the top of the screen. It still rings, and they'll just be on the banner. It'll just have the green call button, and you can press call and go into the full screen phone call experience, or you just swipe the banner away and it goes away. Like, it's such a basic thing, and it feels, it's almost been, you know, rocking around as long as the volume HUD, which they finally addressed last year with iOS 13. And I feel like the phone call UI is the last man standing on that basis. Like, the thing that every year someone's like, please make the phone call UI that different. Please make the phone call UI that different. And in a year where I think in general, we're going to be pretty light on, like, major changes, right? Like, I don't think iOS 14 is going to be a revolution. I don't think they're going to have anything massive, like dark mode, right, which was like affecting every screen on the system last year. I think it's gonna be a much smaller in scope update for iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, probably macOS, probably outside of the ARM stuff. Maybe watchOS has some bigger stuff, because there's been some outside rumors and rumbles and about like a major redesign for a lot of the watch apps, so maybe that's like a bigger focus for them. But I think on the main, like, core iPhone, iPad experience platforms, it can be a relatively light performance and stability focused year, but little things like the phone call UI don't have massive, like, system implications, right? But they're just quality of life improvements that a lot of people would welcome.
Yeah, and we didn't really have an opportunity this year to do kind of wish list episodes. There's just been so much news paired with the fact that we've had reporting since March on what's been in development since December. And so we didn't really get into that, but, you know, stuff from previous years still applies in many cases. My one, like wish is that you could multitask if you're on the Apple Watch and you're on a phone call from the Apple Watch. You know, I ask about that every year and every watch update, and it's surely not a power restriction.
Yeah, like, my three dumb things are kind of like the AirPlay 2 in the sound menu on the Mac, because it's still stupid. Even today, I was listening to a podcast on the Mac, and I was listening through the Safari, not the podcast app. So I went to the sound menu. I was like, oh yeah, I can only choose either the left or the right HomePods. That was stupid. And then the latency is really high, and you can't do multi-room. So AirPlay 2 in the sound menu would be great. I want shared photo libraries for iCloud Photos, not what we have right now, where it's like manually submitted. You want like the base photo library is shared, so you can have multiple people in one library. And when you make changes to the library, everyone sees it, including, you know, deletes, updates, crops, all that sort of stuff. And then I want the TV app to be improved. There's my three. There's my three. Like, if they could address those, I'd be very, very happy. But I don't. The only thing with the TV app that makes me hopeful is that when iOS 14 ships in the fall, that's when everyone's 3 years of Apple TV Plus start expiring. And so that is the date where it's kind of like crunch time for actually having, you know, people making their mind up about whether they're going to keep the subscription running or not. And I guess there's probably chances they do extend the year free, given everything that's happened this year. But in general, it feels like they've invested so much in the content side and the app's just holding them back in a big way. And they seem to be doing some pretty good stuff with the News Plus audio stuff. Music, maybe they have new music stuff that we haven't seen rumors for, but obviously they're doing podcasts. It'd be interesting to see if they have anything on the games front. Probably just game demos this year. I think Apple Arcade's in a pretty good spot, but the TV app really holds back TV Plus. So sound menu, shared photo libraries, sort out the TV app.
Okay, I'll do my multitasking when you're on a phone call from the watch request, a Catalyst version of Health, which would also mean Health on the iPad, This hasn't been rumored, but you know, go for it.
Yep.
It'll list the database. And then something with Dark Sky, which got acquired.
Yeah, the Dark Sky. Personally, I think the Dark Sky stuff will be too soon. So maybe next year you'll get the Dark Sky resolve. But
yeah, nice. All right, cool. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter at ApolloZach, same on Instagram. You can also read my other site for the 9to5 network, spaceexplorer.com. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZMAO.
And you also blog at
BZMAO.com.
Nice. And we will be back, next Thursday. We'll do a usual episode, right?
Yeah,
we always like to digest this stuff.
Obviously, stay tuned to the 9to5 Mac itself. We'll be doing, you know, post coverage all the way through the event. And obviously, it's not just the keynote. Then you've got all the developer session stuff too. So, you know, it'll be a busy week.
Yeah. Where do we land? Do we want to do something? I don't think we're going to do anything different, though. We're just going to do what we're doing now. The thing that we're doing different is we're doing live YouTube video with comments. So we'll do that Thursday. Nothing for Monday, right? Nothing for keynote?
Yeah, I'd love to do something at some point, but I don't think... It's the problem with Monday is just so busy for us, right? With all the...
Yeah, we're putting everything on 9to5 Mac and processing it all ourselves. So.
But obviously, we'll be here like we are every week for Happy Hour.
Cool. I will have an episode of my 9to5 Mac Watch Time podcast out on Monday night, and that's because stop what you're doing and go to wwdc.tempo.run and register for my virtual 5K because me and my pal Rahu Mata have put together this virtual 5K race for WWDC, which is you run or walk 3.1 miles on Tuesday. I think Wednesday technically works too, but on Tuesday, and you unlock a feature in the Tempo app. He built Sign In with Apple to make this registration possible for the virtual 5K, which is very neat. And the first 500 participants will be randomly selected to receive those 9to5 Mac stickers that I ordered a little while ago. And I want as many people
free,
to
right?
totally free to do. Yeah, totally free. And so far, if you register, you win a sticker because, you know, I've got 1,000 actually. And so we want to say 500 plus. And so check it out. It's just wwdc.tempo.run that will give you all the instructions that you need. And there will be an episode of Watch Time Out, which is just a deep dive on Watch OS 7 and what comes next week to celebrate. And that came from the idea of normally, you know, so WWDC this year is virtual only because of COVID-19. In prior years, they've had, as a developer session, a run with Nike and developers attending the conference run together, or an unofficial run each weekday where developers get together and run together in the same way. So again, it's run or walk, either one. And I think there's like a virtual sticker that you unlock that Michael Stieber designed that'll be like the activity challenges nice. From Apple. Yeah. But also like literally physical stickers that you'll get for free if you participate. So, all right. Thanks everybody for listening. We will be back next week. Bye everybody.
Bye bye.